Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where we celebrate the old and the young. Yes, 39-year-old Jorge Molina became the oldest scorer ever of a hat-trick in La Liga. The Granada striker is old enough to be the father of all of Barcelona's goal scorers from this weekend. He would have had to have started young with Ferran Jukler, but you know what footballers are like. It's been a good weekend for Sevilla as well, and not just because Betis lost. No, they're bigger than that. It's because they beat Atleti, while Real Madrid dropped points against Cadiz and their 16-man defence. Luka Modric was out with COVID. You've got to look after the old people this time of year. Real Madrid also went to the trouble of including Gareth Bale's name in the list of absentees. But maybe we could just assume he's out and you send out a press release if he ever plays again. Getafe have had an interesting week with a 5-0 defeat in the Copa del Rey against a team called Atletico Baleares from the regionalised third tier of Spanish football. But they followed that with a win over Osasuna and they're out of the drop zone for the first time this season. We're running a poll. Who should be sacked first? Diego Simeone or Imanol Alguacil after their repeated failures. Thank you for listening. Merry Christmas, everybody, especially to the Patreons because they pay us and that's the spirit of Christmas. Patreon.com/LTEL and you would be contributing to the podcast. Terry is here. You went to see Father Christmas yesterday. Terry, how was he?
Yes, he was fine, yep. Good. Went with the grandchildren, so he's... present and correct at the moment. He's
was he behind
a mask from home?
Right, was
he? Yeah, it's big, a big white furry mask.
Right, okay, right. right. So where till we start? I tell you what. Let's what we don't normally do. We wouldn't normally start with Granada versus Mallorca, would we, Terry? But shall we? After
exactly.
All, is a man Jorge Molina is a man that you and I have celebrated on our podcasts over a number of years. Not. Actually, to be fair, not 20 years. He's old enough to have played in La Liga for 20 years, but he was a bit of a late starter, wasn't he, in coming to our attention. But what a career, the second half of his career, he's had. And then he bangs in a hat-trick, the oldest ever, as I say, the oldest ever scorer of a hat-trick in La Liga. He's done magnificently well, hasn't he?
He has. He's been amongst the goals lately quite a bit. In an upturn in Granada's form, he's one of the biggest reasons why they suddenly look... the more familiar team, beginning to look like the Diego Martinez team, and he's one of the biggest reasons. And it's incredible. You think back to him, Ruben Castro, when Betis got promoted from the second division. That was probably both of their first crack at the top flight, and they're a great partnership. And then from then on, he's kept scoring goals, and then he keeps getting transfers, and you keep... And my first thought when he gets another transfer is, what are they thinking? You know, this time that he's moving on, when he moved on to Granada, I thought, well, where's the thinking in that? I'm glad to be proved wrong. He still does all the fundamentals well of a big centre forward. He's still a very good target man. And now and he's continuing to show an end product. It's incredible to think of 39. I mean, we lured Joaquin, who got a standing ovation when he came on at Athletic Bilbao, which I thought was a fantastic touch from the Athletic supporters. Didn't surprise me, though, to be honest. He's a popular guy wherever he goes. And I think Jorge Molina is probably reaching that status now where I think team supporters of other teams will recognise that this is an extraordinary player. You know, he's not a world superstar, but he's looked after himself. He's kept himself fit. And as I say, he knows the fundamentals of being a big striker, playing with his back to goal. And he's always had an eye for goal. So to do that at the age of 39, and it was a really good hat-trick, a couple of really good goals in there, typical strikers' goals, is a fantastic achievement. And one that's been, thankfully, been recognised by the fact he's got the hat-trick, become the oldest player in La Liga history to score a hat-trick. And I think it suddenly, you know, brings him to everybody's attention for this weekend. And rightly so. Much deserved. So much respect for Jorge Molina. Super achievement and a super footballer.
Nice. That'll do us for Granada versus Mallorca. Don't get carried away, obviously. You know, Mallorca fans. So let's go almost to the top of the league. Let's go to Sevilla versus Atletico Madrid, which was in many ways the big game of the weekend. It was the one we're sort of finding out whether Atleti, you know, was it a bit of a stumble? Was it just a bit of a slow start? Or have they got no chance of winning the league? And I think we're looking very much at the latter now. Didn't exactly get battered by Sevilla. Rokitic, as we know, rechristening him with the opener. But then Atleti had equalised And Sevilla won it with a late goal by Ocampos. So, Terry, give us a quick breakdown of this game.
Well, the game was the sort of game you expect. I mean, neither teams are high scoring, but they're both good defensively. I was not surprised at Rakitic's goal. We've seen him do it many times. It was a wonderful strike. So you can't put any blame on defensively on Atletico. You can't put any blame on Oblak in goal. I could probably apportion blame for the Atletico equaliser defensively for Sevilla. You know, to allow Felipe to head home from close range, relatively unmarked. And then the third goal, the winning goal, it was a really tight game. It could have gone either way. I thought it was heading for the draw until Sevilla came up with a winner with Ocampos after a bit of a goal mouth scramble. But he tucked it home nicely. But it was just exactly the type of game I expected. Two good teams. I don't want to be too critical of Atletico because it's the type of result teams at the top have suffered over the last decade or so. When you go to the Sanchez-Pizjuan, it's not a big surprise if a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or an Atletico do get beat by them. So it was an excellent result for Sevilla. Really was, because, you know, consequently, the result for Real Madrid means that quite clearly at the moment they are the closest challengers. Some injury issues for Sevilla to deal with as well. And I thought both teams played it well. I'm normally critical of Lopetegui's tactics, but I wasn't in this game because it was against a team that probably his classic tactics should be applied, and they were. And I thought it was a smashing game of football. So I wouldn't be too critical of Atletico, but the fact is I think it's three on the trot they've lost in La Liga, which means, you know, Mallorca, Real Madrid, and now Sevilla. So it's meant they have lost ground, and it's going to make it extremely difficult. To be honest, I can't see them getting back into the title race, 14 points behind with a game in hand. I just can't see a collapse from Real Madrid to that extent. So I think Atletico, incredibly, Barcelona are only 2 points behind Atletico. Mm. And look at how critical and what a mess Barcelona's season has been. And then you look at it and you see Atletico just 2 points above them. So, you know, you can see there the run of form, three straight defeats. That's, in my opinion, I think has finished their campaign in terms of being champions this season, retaining what they had. So it's a tough loss, but not one that I would be too critical of, because, as I say, going to Sevilla is a difficult game for any team.
Yes, so might as well crack straight onto Barcelona, since you've teed it up nicely, Terry. So it's almost like we script it sometimes, this, isn't it? So Barcelona, well, it was fun, Barcelona's game, wasn't it? The youngsters got the goals. As I say, he's not that young, he's 22, but just about.
His first start, wasn't it?
Yeah. So he's a newbie, if not necessarily a youngster. But then a fabulous goal by Gavi, who's, you know, a player with... Yeah, a boy with huge confidence. But then, as we're finding with Barcelona, nothing these days is straightforward, as you would expect of a team that is put together, you know, cobbled together, isn't it? Of young kids, some old guys who are past their best, and not an awful lot of them at their peak in this Barcelona team. So they find it hard to get rid of Elche, but they did in the end with a goal from Nico, 3-2.
Yeah, it was an incredible game, because it started off, first half was comprehensive from Barcelona. They were excellent. And you thought it could have been more than just a two-goal advantage. And then it's suddenly out of the blue, a couple of substitutions, two substitutes come on at Tete Morente and Perry Mir, and they both score a goal. And those goals come in the space of 2 minutes, 62nd and 63rd minute. And suddenly it became familiar story of Barcelona. They looked like the team we've been watching all season, where a bit shambolic, to be honest. You know, everyone looked a bit confused. But they did show spirit. They deserved the win, but it was hard work. But as you said, it was a fun game to watch. It was entertaining. I mean, the problems for Barcelona are clearly still there. They're not going to go away quickly. And I'm talking about tactically. When Elche break, it's always three against two or four against three. It's somehow Xavi has got to eradicate that issue of quick get the ball forward and you're outnumbered Barcelona defenders, which led to the second goal in particular. And it's that's just that I don't know what he can do that. If they don't win the ball back, they're in trouble.
Yeah, so that's a tactical issue, isn't it? Because we see other teams, I can name other teams who do that, to varying levels of success. Leeds United play a bit like that, don't they? They are, and you know, they lost 7-0 against, not a good scoreline against Manchester City.
4-1.
Bayern Munich play a bit like that, but they're so good and they've got so much pace that they sort of get away with it a bit. And it's sort of quite high stakes, isn't it? They're, where you're not leaving yourself layers of protection, basically.
Yeah,
when you're defending.
No, it is. I think you need really like rapid defenders, which Bayern do have, and they have a goalkeeper that plays sweeper, so his starting position is almost like an outfield player. That helps on a lot of occasions as well. So you have to be so precise and accurate with the long ball forward, because anything too far, Neuer sweeps up. So maybe Ter Stegen has to look at that, because we don't see him. We know he's good with the ball at his feet.
But
we don't see him playing 20 yards outside his penalty box. So that makes it even more difficult for a player to put the ball into space over the top. If you can see the goalkeeper there, it kind of puts an element of doubt in your mind. But we don't see that with Ter Stegen. He's still in his penalty box. He very rarely ventures out and doesn't start. His starting position is far deeper than Neuer, for instance. So that could be one issue that Xavi could sort out. But I think quicker defenders is the answer. You look at their defenders, Alba is probably the quickest, yet he's always the one that's upfield and out of position invariably. He's normally the one that's playing left wing. So when it does get played forward, you like to PK and Longley and Mingueza and Eric Garcia. They're the ones chasing back towards goal, maybe Busquets. So the pace isn't there for them to play that. So then you have to consider, well, can we do that if we haven't got the quickest defenders? Umtiti would be the quickest one when he's fully fit. Rather surprised he didn't play, because I thought he played well in the previous game. So that's the issue for Barcelona. It's always going to be that. And if you think Elche could cause problems, what's going to happen? Well, we've seen what happens when you play against the bigger teams in La Liga and you play against the biggest teams in the Champions League. So that's an ongoing issue. It's been there for a while. And I think primarily it's because their defensive players are probably not quick enough. Araujo will be a benefit if they're going to play that style. He's quick enough to not outstrip every opponent, but at least compete and stay alongside them and get back into the defensive position. But that's going to be a problem. But Gavi was, not just his goal, his play was, it's incredible. And Nico comes on and scores. You say Jukla, surprisingly, played up front, because when you got the team, you're looking at it and you think, well, who's going to be? Everyone assumed it would be Dembele, but it wasn't. He played wide on the right. And Jukla up the middle, Abde was good again. It's an interesting period, isn't it? And as I say, there are only 2 points behind Atletico Madrid behind. And they've got a big game coming up this week as well. They go to the Sanchez-Pizjuan. So we'll get a look at the tactics there that Xavi uses. We get a look at the maybe, one or two players didn't play at the weekend. Maybe Frankie de Jong, who came off and I thought was playing really well, did a wonderful skill with the half volley Cruyff pass from a long diagonal pass played to him, made it look ridiculously easy. He played well, but he came off. Nico went on and scored. So one or two team selection issues, but I think Xavi's going to need some of the experienced players in that game. Which is something to look forward to Tuesday evening. So that gives I think we all know where Barcelona are, but it'd be interesting to see what their progression is like against Sevilla on Tuesday evening. So
we don't necessarily know where they are. We know they're not where they were. It's all about whether they're top four material, isn't it?
This
season. That's what is up for grabs, as it were. Real Madrid at the top of the league, but they did drop points against Cadiz, who've been something of a bogey side for them. On a Cadiz possession watch, Terry, have you looked it up? Do you know how much possession they had?
Oh, yes. Grand total of 18%.
Yes. which is not a lot, considering they did play 16 defenders in this game.
Carlos Acapo was player of the weekend. I talk about, podcast listeners have probably heard me say, defenders don't sense danger. Now, he doesn't on a regular basis, but in this game, oh my goodness, I checked there was only one of him because he was blocking crosses. Every time someone looked like they were through on goal to shoot in the penalty area where most of the game was played, Real Madrid's attacking third of the pitch. It was that the game was just I haven't seen a game like that for a long time, where it's just exclusively played in one part of the pitch.
Fascinating, wasn't it, in a way? Yeah. Just because they're bright, and there's bright yellow shirts, and they were swarming around their own penalty area, as you say. And it was quite fascinating to see whether they held out, and they did.
Oh, it's incredible they held out. And a Capo in particular, he was charging across from the centre-back position, a full-back position from... And he was spotting danger right throughout the game. And the amount of times he threw himself in front of a shot, and you're thinking, it's him again. It can't be him again. But that summed them up. And the Gredo comes on, and they get the ball upfield slightly, and he kept losing it. You're thinking, no, surely he must do more than just flick it off or chest control, and it bounces away, and Real Madrid were swarming again. I mean, it was the highest scorers in the league. Real Madrid against the second worst defence in the league, a team that are on an awful run of form. Real Madrid 82% possession. They've had 10 straight wins in all competitions. They had 36 shots, 9 on target. And to be honest, Ledesma didn't have to do that many miraculous saves.
No.
They were long-range attempts or, you know, stuff that you'd expect a goalkeeper to save. Cadiz had 4 shots, none on target. So it was... As you said, I all the way through the game, I'm thinking right to the very last kick of the game, I'm thinking Real Madrid have got to score, you know. So I think it goes to show. We talked last week about they've won the league. I said they haven't because they haven't got enough points on the board yet. They're going to need another 30, 40 points probably. And with this situation that we find ourselves in yet again with the COVID situation, you don't know how it's going to affect teams, and affect clubs, and affect players. And, you know, if important players are missing through one reason or another, injury, illness, testing positive and stuff like that, it's in like a lot of sports now. You're looking at it and thinking, oh, we can't predict as we used to because you just don't know what's around the corner. So it closes the gap to Sevilla. But it was Real Madrid didn't play bad. Maybe not as sharp as they should be in the final third, not as clinical as they have been. But it's hard to be critical of them when they've been so good lately. So it's drop points in a game they should expect to win. You only need one goal, and they couldn't get that. But loads of credit to Cadiz. I don't want to see teams playing like that every week, which they do. But I understand that against Real Madrid, they do. Doing that.
It's almost like they believed in it against Real Madrid, wasn't it? Because as you say, for all they play defensively every week, their defensive record is pretty poor. And sometimes I sort of look at them and think they're a bit stuck between playing like that and not playing like that. And then it's hard to commit to playing like that every week, isn't it? Of defending life depends on it. Like, and we're not going to leave the penalty area unless we really have to.
It's almost like they're allowed. They feel they're allowed to do that, do it with belief.
Yeah.
Against the club that they're allowed to do it against.
Yeah.
They're allowed to do it against Real Madrid, Sevilla, Atletico, Barcelona. It's when they play against Getafe or Alaves or Levante, they don't have the belief that it's almost like a group of players thinking, well, we could beat these if we played normal. Yeah. Why are we playing like this?
Yeah.
And they didn't have that enthusiasm that we saw last night. And you know, against Real Madrid and those big clubs, they're allowed to do that. That's their prerogative. And it kind of looked like, as you said, last night, they actually believed in the cause, in what they were doing. It was their best way to get the result. They trusted the manager. And they threw themselves literally in front of everything to get a, you know, celebrated point for them, to get a point in the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. It's still a massive achievement for a relatively newly promoted club.
It's a good round of games, actually, wasn't it? Some good competitive matches. So let's do another one. Athletic beat Betis by 3-2. Iñaki Williams finding his route to goal. He's an enigma, is Iñaki, isn't he? You know, magnificent moments where you think, oh, how can he score a goal? But he got two in this. It swayed, ebbs and flows, because Betis very quickly equalised through the goal machine that is Juanmi. They led. Athletic came back and won the game late on with a De Marcos deflected goal.
Yeah, and two good goals from Iñaki. First one was a good goal. Second one was a great goal. Great finish. You can question the keeper and then the opposed Rui Silva. But the element of power from Iñaki Williams' finish was enough to catch him.
It was a good goal.
Great strike. And one that hit with a player that looked more confident. Even the first goal he took well. I think that early goal gave Athletic a real boost. you know, getting that, you know, problem of not being able to score a goal, however hard they were trying, they get the first goal. But then when Betis go ahead, I'm thinking that's it. I still didn't have enough faith in the fact that Athletic would win the game, maybe sneak a draw. But this battling spirit shone through. They got the equaliser, put on the pressure at the end, and eventually got the win from De Marcos. But that was, I wouldn't say it was much better from Athletic. I think they've been playing all right, but it was much better, more efficient, more clinical in front of goal. We have to talk about one thing, because it's incredible how he's turned out. Like Paul Gamelina, we spoke a little bit about. One me, I've been looking at his stats. He's in 11 goals, so he's two behind Benzema, who everybody recognises and agrees he's having an unbelievable season, Karim Benzema. One me's got 11, so he's two goals behind. He has played in total 969 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's just over 10 and a half games. He's only started 12 games and four substitute appearances, totally in 35, 24, 15 and 27 minutes. So this form, I don't recognise him. That this goal in this game is an opportunist goal, isn't it? He taps in a chance that might have been going in, might not have been going in. But he's in the right place at the right time and he's consistently doing that. And it's just an incredible run of form and a turnaround from a player that he's not young by any means. He's not just broke through. He's been around for a long time. Made his debut at 17 at Malaga. But it just goes to just to reiterate what confidence does to a player. I mean, you can see he's the clubs he's played for, and he, you know, he's a young player at Real Madrid and Zaragoza and Depor. But it's Malaga who made his debut, then Racing and loan and Southampton, a move that didn't work out. Real Sociedad, where he was okay, but there's nothing like this. I mean. In terms of goals and appearances that he's showed throughout his career. But I mean, I kept thinking this season, has he been a regular? I know he has lately because he has to be because he's scoring all these goals. But he wasn't at the beginning of the season. It was William Jose and it's Borja Iglesias and other players playing up front. And
then, how sustainable is this, Terry?
It's not. Yeah. Ride this wave as long as you can. To be this element of confidence for any footballer, you've got to make the most of it because it's the first time we've seen it from him. Everything comes natural. Everything is instinct. He doesn't have to think about anything. I was thinking about the term, how different life is for a player with confidence and not. And I can tell from my experience, you even prefer going into training when you're confident. When you're not got, because you have that confidence where you feel like you're going to score every game. You're not going to miss an opportunity. You're confident about starting every game. So you go into training with, you know, riding on a cloud, to be honest. And then when you're not confident, you can dread going into training because you dread missing a chance in training. You can dread a shooting practice in training where 10 other players are joining in with you shooting and there's no opposition and your confidence is fragile or low and you're not scoring. And it plays on your mind and stuff like that. But I once spoke to someone and put it into practice that when you weren't scoring and you weren't confident, don't do shooting practice.
Oh, really?
Don't do any extra stuff. It was up to the coach to put on small-sided games on a small pitch. So you're not under that pressure of being isolated on a one-on-one situation with six, seven, eight people watching you because you felt, you know, the pressure of that, let alone the pressure of playing in front of 20, 30, 50, 60,000 people. But in a small-sided game and a small pitch, things happen quickly. You don't have a chance to think. And that might, you know, when I was coaching, that was one thing I thought of, that you might galvanise a player that hasn't got confidence in a game that ends 10-8 over a 20, 30-minute period. He might get three goals. That might just be the trigger. But when you see someone like Wanmi, who's been playing for a number of years now, and he's scoring every single game. As I said, he's two behind Benzema and everyone is lauding Benzema, rightly so. But he's only made 12 starts. He's got 11 goals. And we talked about him being the highest Spanish goal-scoring striker. And now he's nearly, you know, he's two goals behind the Pichichi. It's incredible stuff. But it was a disappointing result for Betis.
Yeah.
You know, when they went 2-1 up, great goal from Fekir. Really good. They were playing some nice football. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, do you know what? They're really good. Defensively, they're solid, good goalkeeper, good in midfield. Carvalho was playing well again yesterday, and you look at them up front, and whoever's playing up front seems to be amongst the goals or carries a goal scoring threat. Then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Athletic come back with their spirit and tenacity and quality and got the win. So it was a really good game of football.
Rayo Vallecano, I've got the best home record in the whole of La Liga. Better than Madrid, better than Sevilla, better than Atleti, Barcelona, the lot. Rayo Vallecano playing in front of what I think must be a building site behind one end of the pitch, because it's just a big tarpaulin, isn't it, at the end of the pitch. But they've
always been there. Never been a stand there, John.
Oh, right. Okay.
I asked the question. They've never had a stand behind that goal.
Oh, right.
No idea. Yep. I can remember commentating on years ago and it was there, wasn't it? So it is familiar to, we see it with other clubs who have a new stand.
Would come out from behind.
My understanding is there's never been a stand there. I might be wrong, but be interesting.
You can't buy tickets. You have to go and buy a ticket from the ground, apparently.
No online present.
Right, okay. But they're fourth in the league. They'll be in the How can they be in the Champions League next season?
There is a team in Portugal, isn't there? They've got a big mountain, a big rock.
That's Braga, isn't it?
Perhaps that might have to put some sort of plastic building up that looks like a rock.
Yeah.
A temporary structure.
Or do the old thing that did like at Arsenal with the pictures of the faces and do that.
But the telling point was that Iraola says it's about 30 points. He's still looking down, and I get that. Because 30 points isn't enough for safety. Newly promoted, favourites to go down. Astonishing season they're having. You could forgive him now if he still looked a bit more relaxed. He just looks delirious after every single game. That home record is incredible. I mean, I think they're about 4 points better off than anybody else in La Liga. Mm. They've played nine, they've won eight, drawn one. Their goals record at home, scored 19, conceded 3. Mm. It's astonishing. It really is. But they're fun to watch. They've worked really hard. I've got an interesting debate about the goal in this game. But he's right to say the 30 points in less than half a season is beyond his wildest dreams. I mean, if you were talking that Rye had 30 points with 5 or 6 games to go, that probably is where he was expecting to be. He would be expecting to be that in a dogfight at the end of the season. They're 7, 8, 10 points away from safety. But I have an interesting debate, and
go on.
I want to throw this over to people about the goal for Guardiola. If I can describe it, if people haven't seen it, he's a centre forward. He's 5 yards offside, making no attempt to get back on. And the ball is played wide to Alvaro Garcia, I assume because it's wide on the left. He beats the offside trap and then he crosses it to a unmarked Guardiola who had a 5 yard head start on the defence that held a good line. So it's a good straight back four line.
Yeah.
They're holding it quite high. And they get caught out by the speed of Alvaro Garcia. They're not the first team this season that's done that, but that left side of Rio with Fran Garcia and Alvaro Garcia have been incredible. So he beats that offside trap. It's not the worst defensive line in the world, far from it. But Guardiola is miles offside. So then once this quick player gets away, all Guardiola do is got to allow Alvaro Garcia to overtake him, and he slides it across the face of the goal and he taps it in. Why haven't more players and more teams? We have these technical analysts and all these countless people. We have set piece coaches. We have throwing coaches. We have millions of sports scientists and data analysts. And each team in the Premier League will have 5 coaches. Nothing worse than that for a coach. I did it at Fulham. Went from being a manager, assistant manager relationship at Wycombe Wanderers and Northern Ireland to suddenly there was 5 of us doing the same job. And you find yourself picking up the cones and collecting the balls and putting out the pips. It's nothing worse. So give someone, there must be a plan that you could
use that offside.
Reminiscent of Van Nistelrooy.
Yeah. And Ronaldo. Right. I was going to say that because Ruud van Nistelrooy started doing that 20 years ago and it hasn't really caught on.
And Not at all.
The other thing that in favour, because I wholeheartedly agree with you and with Guardiola, the VAR would surely work in favour of this, because what might have happened previously, because he looks so offside, a lino might have stuck his flag up thinking, oh, he must have, look out, oh, he must be offside. But now, of course, you've got the backup. As long as you do, as long as you get it right and you stay behind the wide player or the ball, as long as you're level with the ball, you're onside, aren't you? So, so you've got that start. Why not? Yeah, because you see good players run offside and then come back. They operate offside, basically, and try and get back onside at the right moment. And obviously, you can get it wrong. But yeah, why not just play 5 yards offside? In that
my son Josh was watching the Sevilla Atletico Madrid game, and he said Suarez should just only stay in the penalty area.
Never come back.
What would defenders do then if you just say, Simeone said to Luis Suarez, don't ever come back. We won't pass to you until you're behind the ball. So if you just want to stay in their penalty, defenders against Raya from Alaves, as I say, they looked in the element of they're holding the line, but they're aware he's offside. So they're thinking if the ball goes straight to him, he's offside. But it doesn't. It goes, so all you've got to do is tell your players, don't pass to him until he's onside. Because then, you as a defender, you're thinking, I know what they're trying to do. You've got to drop off.
But those you can't give... Those runs could come through the middle as well, can't they? In that he could stand as offside as he likes, and they're always he's offside, and a little bit of relaxation when the ball goes straight. But then if a player breaks through the middle, you've got to go with him, haven't you?
I guess then, he can't go near the ball,
and he can't play any part in the build-up. So the build-up's got to be quite effective and direct, doesn't it? Because you can't use your centre forward. That's the drawback of it, but... As a tactic, why not? Let's do Real Sociedad, a fourth consecutive defeat, Terry. In previous weeks, we've said it's the worst kind of time. They won't sack him. I'm entirely joking about sacking him. Sometimes managers do get sacked. Aston Villa sacked Dean Smith off the back of 5 defeats. Sometimes a run of defeats. It's not like everything has gone horribly wrong in the games. You know, they had a man sent off at 1-1. They had the belt for a stupid red card. And it was critical in this game. And they've had other games like that in these four where it's just football sometimes. Sometimes you lose a game without being terrible. Is that a fair enough summary?
It is totally right. I mean, it was a red card for Jose Albo. I don't know whether it was intent and the nastiness was there in his challenge, but it was a mistimed Studs challenge down the back of the ankles. It was a nasty, nasty challenge. Jeremy Pino, I think. And Villarreal played all right. It could have gone either way. It was in the balance until late Chukwueze Old puts the icing on the cake with a 3-1 victory. But up until that point, you're looking at, again, I talk about fundamentals, 2 goals conceded, headed goals from Moreno from set pieces. That's a failure. That will be a source of frustration because Soloff had a chance, was wonderful save from the Villarreal keeper to deny him from close range, which would have made it 2-2. There was other chances when it was 1-1 that could have gone Real Sociedad's way. That with 10 men for most of the second half, where Yozabal gets sent off in the 49th minute, it was an even game. It's tough going. It's 1 point from the last 5 that's seen them slide down the table. So we've made the fact that they've had injured players, but they're slowly but surely coming back. So it's just a tough period where they're suffering with a lack of confidence. Their belief isn't as high as it was when they went, I think, 11, 12 games, just the first defeat of the season at Barcelona on week one. So it's tough for them to find that rhythm again. I think we all expected, we didn't expect Real Sociedad to stay the distance, didn't expect a slide like this. It needs to be arrested quickly. And it's possible because they're still a good football team. So, tough little period, which, you know, clubs at the stature of Real Sociedad in challenging at the top, playing European football, it can happen. I mean, I haven't looked at the fixtures, but I know it's 1 point in the last 5. There's been some tough games in amongst that as well. In the tough games, close games, you need to have that confidence of belief. They had that earlier in the season. They haven't got it at the moment. And they're just coming up short. The 3-1 flattered Villarreal, but back-to-back wins for them after qualifying for the knockout stages of the Champions League. It looks, and Gerard Moreno is key. I mean, I can talk about all the other stuff, but you get Gerard Moreno back playing again. He scores 2 goals and made the other goal as well. And unselfish, I have to say, he threw for a hat-trick. and just the goalkeeper beat, squared if it took ways to finish off. So excellent result for Villarreal. And they're a much better team with Gerard Moreno back in it.
Getafe beat Osasuna. Osasuna haven't won in 9 games now. We were lauding them at the start of the season. Yeah. Getafe are out of the bottom three. It was a late goal by Poveda to get it for them. But it is, I mean, that weird cup 5-0 defeat aside, that was weird. It was a changed team, but they were recognisable names. They weren't a gang of 17-year-olds playing in that match. But they're improved, aren't they, under Kike Sanchez Flores? More like, as I think you said previously, more like Getafe that we've known from recent seasons.
One defeat in the last eight.
Yeah.
They've collected, I think, 13 of their 15 points in the last eight games. Mm. They've 3 wins, 4 draws, 1 defeat away to Villarreal, which was a 1-0 defeat, which was they were unlucky. And it is, it's what, you know, Getafe should be. I enjoyed the enthusiasm with which everybody celebrated the goal. The crowd, you know, we've given them criticism in the past, the Colosseum, where it's been half empty. Decent crowd getting behind their team, celebrating with their team when they got the late dramatic winner. Kike Sanchez Flores still up in the balconies, behind the glass, celebrating with a number of people. And it was to see that joy at the Colosseum with Getafe was, I you know, this run of form they're going on, I kind of expected it because they've gone back to playing how they should. That's with two up front. The players playing in their right positions in midfield, a good midfield, 2 good wing backs, good goalkeeper, solid at the back. I'm not surprised to see them, and this little bit of confidence from this, you can tell how important the win was, how pleasing it was. It saw them go up 3 places in the league, so not just out of the relegation zone, they've climbed their way out of it. I mean, it's, you know, 15 points, and the level with Alaves are in the bottom 3, but it's significant that for the first time this season, they've jumped out the relegation zone and Getafe are going in. Dario Poveda, a decent header, poorly defended from Osasuna. They allowed a cross into the box in the last minute of the game, 93rd minute of the game. The cross could have been stopped, but a player, I think it might be Roberto Torres, gets out there, doesn't do enough to block it, allows the cross into the box, and anything can happen. And that's how Getafe managed to get the dramatic winner that's given them a massive boost. Now, they're going to be hard to play against for the rest of the season. And they've got enough quality going forward that I think they will, you know, move their way comfortably out of the relegation issue.
Celta Vigo drew 3-1 with Espanyol, Terry. Spot the... that's it. That's how football works. Celta Vigo beat Espanyol 3-1 because that's... You can't draw 3-1. Mid-table game, but a sign of a good weekend, I guess, isn't it? When that one was it was at least entertaining, although comfortable, I guess, for Celta.
Yeah, I'm looking at the goal scorers. Celta Vigo got 20 and 14 have come from Santi Mina and Aspas. Mm. 8 for Aspas, 6 for Santi Mina. I look at Denis Suarez scoring goals. Celta got good players. They haven't got a big squad. Fortunately for them, they've managed to keep the majority of them fit this season. Aspas is key, of course, and it seems every game he misses, they don't win. So it was a tidy performance from Celta. They've got good players all around the team, and as I say, small squad. The big talking point would be the goal from Laurent Moron. Fantastic goal. That probably was worth the draw. It was worth more than one goal, but it was a merely consolation goal, 92nd minute. He's running out towards the trainer's bench on the halfway line and wraps his foot around it and gives it a right good whack. Over the goalkeeper who's off his line and Deteur, and he had no chance of making the save. But no, good, classic Celta performance. Good football. And this time they were, you know, as I say, tied in their finishing. Aspas in particular made Neil give and go for the first goal, scores a good goal himself for the second. And then Denis Suarez wrapped it up. So Celta are a decent team. They should be a touch higher than where they are in the league.
And still to come in this round of games, there's Levante who are bound. This is the one. This is the one that they're going to win. It's against Valencia. It'd be the perfect way to end the long, long record-breaking run.
The narrative has changed now because that record's gone. Mm. The record they didn't want. now the narrative, the pressure is on every team that plays them, not wanting to be the one that, that gets beat by a team that's statistically the worst ever in La Liga. So there'd be pressure on Valencia, but, you know, and Levante haven't been a million miles away. It wouldn't surprise me if Levante were to win this on Monday evening. I'm not predicting it because I don't know how on the floor the Levante players are. Perhaps that pressure has been taken off. Now they can get back to being a regular La Liga team, just worrying about points and wins and getting out of the relegation battle, as opposed to having that double issue of we need points and we need wins to get up the table to close the gap. And also we need a win to stop that record. So now that's gone. They can play with freedom, express themselves. I'm joking. And try and get a win since first one since April.
Right then. So I'm not sure when we're on this because I'm going away. It sounds glamour. It sounds like I'm going to the Bahamas or something. In fact, going to my mum's and the broadband isn't very good. So last time we tried to record there, it was all the way through. So we'll be back at some point. We're going to record something now, a secret bit for patrons. And I'm not even going to say what it is yet because we have to make sure that we actually get him on successfully. So all being well, there'll be a Patreon's special that we'll share, that we'll schedule for a couple of days from now and share with you. But thank you very much, everybody. So as I say, there are a couple of games, sort of mopping up games, aren't there, from here or there that have been missed, and one that's been brought forward, the Real Madrid games.
Some good games this week.
Actually quite important games. So enjoy those. Enjoy your football, stay healthy, everybody, and thank you, Merry Christmas, and thank you for your continued support, and have a lovely festive period, as we say in football. See you soon.